Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is March 29, 2017. The markets were mixed a little bit today. The Dow closing down to 20,659, the NASDAQ up at 58.97, and the S&P looks like it was up at 23.61. We're talking about the DOL fiduciary rule. DOL, what's that? Department of Labor fiduciary rule. What is it? What does it mean? What does it mean to you, and where do we stand with it? We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. My guest this evening is Carrie Pector, editor and publisher of the Retirement Income Journal and author of such books as Annuities for Dummies. It's been a while since Carrie was on the show, but he has been here before and has a lot to share. And I thought it was really important to bring someone on who could kind of remove some of the confusion about what we're hearing in the news. DOL, Department of Labor, fiduciary, what does it all mean? It sounds so confusing. Does it apply? So we are going to talk to Carrie this evening and hopefully get a little bit more clarification. And if you have questions about this type of information, again, you can call in at 610-758-8810, and we take questions live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Lori, and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So right now, I would like to introduce Carrie Pector, again, editor and publisher of the Retirement Income Journal. Carrie, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here.
Thank you for coming. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I live in Emmaus. I worked for several years at the Rodale Press. I've been a freelance business writer. I've worked at the Vanguard Group. I've worked in New York for a company called Source Media, and I've written Annuities for Dummies, and about 8 years ago, I started my own publication online called Retirement Income Journal. It's a online magazine. It's a weekly, subscription-based, that's about and for the people who work in the retirement industry. And that's an industry that encompasses 401k plans, annuities, Social Security, a whole range of things that people don't usually think about until they're in their 50s or 60s.
So, Carrie, real quick, that Retirement Income Journal, that you mm-hmm. said that's geared more toward people working in the industry, so not necessarily the individual. Is it more for professionals?
It's more for professionals. It's about really what's going on behind the scenes of the retirement business, things that you don't see in advertisements, and it's about what they're concerned about.
Okay, and probably interpreting a lot of what's mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm. So I am happy to have you here. So we're going to talk about a fiduciary rule, and years ago I felt like people didn't really know what being a fiduciary in the investment world really meant. You never heard those words back in the day. But now it's in the headlines all the time, the fiduciary rule. Can you explain what we are going to discuss this evening?
Well, the fiduciary rule is a regulation passed last year by the Employee Benefit Security Administration section of the Department of Labor. And it essentially changed the status quo in the world of 401k plans and individual retirement accounts in a couple of very important ways. First, it expanded the Department of Labor's jurisdiction to cover not just 401k plans, but also IRAs. The Department of Labor traditionally covers pensions, and then it expanded to cover 401k plans when they were invented, but it never clearly covered individual retirement accounts, which many, many Americans have. So prior to this, it was the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority that regulated the people who got paid to recommend investments to IRA owners and other people. And the agents who sold insurance products to IRA owners were regulated by the individual states in which they operated. Now, with the fiduciary rule, the Department of Labor decided that it would regulate IRAs in a way similar to the way it regulates 401k plans. And this was very new, very different, significant, and highly controversial.
Okay, so Carrie, I want to kind of recap that because, first of all, on radio, people listen sometimes in snippets, and this is really important, and that was a lot of information. So typically, what we had before were employer retirement plans were regulated under the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. Individual retirement accounts were not under the Department of Labor, maybe because, you know, individual, that's what it stands for, individual retirement plans. They weren't necessarily employer plans, so they weren't under the Department of Labor. Now, the SEC and FINRA, they're investment regulators, mm-hmm. and they regulate investment advice on investments such as what we would have had in an IRA. So people have an individual retirement account, they invest, the SEC and FINRA are kind of watching out for them. So if someone, and then you also mentioned insurance products. So if someone sold you an insurance product like an annuity, and sometimes people sell those within an IRA, those are regulated by even another regulator, the insurance regulators, whoever they are, mm-hmm. and that's at the state level. Mm-hmm. So all these different people kind of were touching different parts of this. So now, whether your retirement accounts are through an employer or held by you individually in an IRA, the Department of Labor, what you're saying, wants to regulate the advice given on those kinds of accounts. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this would be more troublesome for the investment advisor than the investor. So why did the Department of Labor develop the fiduciary rule?
Okay. Well, before I answer that, let me just address, I think it's an easier way to talk about it is to say that the Department of Labor used to regulate only the group investment world.
Okay. Good way to put
it. Which they also call the institutional. Okay. And the other organizations, the state and the Securities and Exchange Commission regulated the individual world.
Okay, great. That's a good way. I like that.
And so now here was the Department of Labor extending its authority into the individual world.
Okay.
Where it had never been before, and its presence was not appreciated, as we'll see.
So that's why folks need to pay attention then, because this now is in the individual world.
Right.
So the Department of Labor then said they wanted to develop the fiduciary rule. Why was that?
Well, the most important reason was to eliminate, in their opinion, what they saw as conflicts of interest among those who served rollover IRA owners. Now, I have to take a moment to explain what a rollover IRA is. A rollover IRA is an individual account that used to be a 401k. Mm-hmm. When somebody changed jobs or retired, they moved their money from the 401k to the individual IRA.
Mm-hmm.
So the Department of Labor was concerned that there were conflicts of interest, specifically in cases where when brokers or advisors receive a commission or other rewards from a third party, it's very important to understand that the money comes from a third party. A broker dealer might pay the advisor or a product manufacturer such as a mutual fund company or an insurance company. They may also pay the advisor. The Department of Labor was concerned that when brokers were serving two masters, their client and the broker-dealer or insurer or mutual fund company that was paying them, that they were in a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. They could not serve these two masters. And for years, that conflict of interest has been finessed. People just sort of overlooked it, and the Department of Labor reasoned that advisors would follow human nature and tend to favor the interests of the entities that paid them.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, the government was concerned that some advisors and their employers recommended, or at least were tempted to recommend, mutual funds and annuities that paid the highest fees and cost consumers the most. This is what the Department of Labor was most concerned about. The Department of Labor also wanted to eliminate hidden fees. Brokers and advisors and insurance agents did not always tell clients that they received commissions or other rewards from third parties. It might have been in the fine print, but they didn't. Most people had no idea how much they were paying, and the Department of Labor wanted to make this more transparent.
Okay. I want to talk more about that when we come back. We're taking a break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking with Carrie Pector regarding the Department of Labor fiduciary rule and what it means to you. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening, editor and publisher Carrie Pector, publisher of the Retirement Income Journal. And we're talking about the Department of Labor fiduciary rule, what it means. And Carrie was just mentioning that one of the reasons the Department of Labor may have been interested in developing this fiduciary rule was an inherent or apparent conflict of interest that advisors may or may not have in making investment suggestions to people if they were going to earn a commission or a fee on it. And I know, Carrie, that at some point the Department of Labor was having fee disclosure at the employer retirement account level, so I could see where they would want that retirement fee disclosure fees for those investments at the individual level, too. So I have a call that I have to take, but we will come back to the fee disclosure in just a moment. We have Barry from Schnecksville on the line. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
Hi. How can I help you?
I have a 1099-B form.
Mm-hmm.
It's a payout from a Talon stock.
Right.
And I'm not quite sure how to report it on my taxes. And I'm not quite sure the value that I should be reporting.
Well, what happens, Barry, is Talon sold to a private company, and you may have acquired Talon through the merger or spinoff of Talon from PPL years ago. So you might, if you had PPL, you're going to have to go back and look at what your cost basis was in PPL or what you paid for the PPL. Work through that spinoff of Talon to see how much cost basis of your PPL followed Talon. And then with the sale of Talon, that would be your cost basis in that based on what you had in PPL if that's how you acquired it. Did you acquire Talon separately or through PPL?
I acquired it as an employee through the dividend reinvestment plan.
Right. So originally PPL and then got Talon, or you got it because you were working at Talon?
Yes, originally PPL
okay.
And then Talon.
Yeah, you're going to have to trace it back. So I would start with how many shares of Talon you had and then how you acquired the Talon from PPL and kind of trace it backwards. and you'll know the cost basis. If it's immaterial, and don't tell me the amount, but you have the sale amount, it's on the 1099-B. It's going to be long-term despite what the holding period says, because it follows where you originally got it if you had PPL longer than a year. And but if it's inconsequential, maybe it doesn't matter going through all the you know, if the and don't tell me the dollars, but if you had proceeds on Talon of $100, it might not be worth going back and calculating it all. You'll have to decide that for yourself. If it's bigger, you want to go through the steps to find out what the cost basis would be. So it's a little homework for you, but it might be worth it to do it. You got to work backwards.
Can you give me a clue as to how to calculate that cost basis?
Well, if you did it through the employee stock purchase plan or through, not through an ESOP, through an employee stock purchase plan, if you did it automatically, PPL, I know in the day, used to be really good about tracking that for their employees. You might be able to call the investor relations group at PPL and ask them if they have any records of it for you. If they do, that would be a great starting place, and then you can kind of trace the shares to see if it all matches up.
Okay.
Okay, but you could start with investor relations, and if not, then if annually you got a little statement from your dividend, from your DRIP plan, not employee stock purchase plan, from your DRIP plan, I apologize, usually on that DRIP plan it might show all of your dividends that reinvested every year, and you could use that and kind of work forward. It's a little work you have to do, but it's doable.
And generally, is this a loss or a gain? Can you give me a clue that's been?
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on each person's situation and, you know, how much stock it was and you know. Yeah, so I can't answer you without more information.
Okay, that's what I needed, Lori. Thank you.
Okay, good luck, Barry. Okay, take care. Bye-bye. So, Carrie, with the Department of Labor, we were talking about the fees. So in order to know the fees the investment advisors were receiving, the investor may have had to read the fine print, you said, in a prospectus, where usually that information is detailed. So what will the rule do for the investor with an IRA?
Well, this affects you if you have money in a rollover IRA, and you have money in a rollover IRA if, as we mentioned before, you change jobs or retired and move the money from a 401k into an IRA. You might have had several 401ks over the course of your career, and then they would accumulate into a rollover IRA that might be very large. And what needs to be pointed out is that the rollover IRA started as nothing and now has more money collectively in rollover IRAs than in 401k plans. There's about $8 trillion in rollover IRAs and a bit less than that now in 401ks. So essentially, the money that the Department of Labor was regulating in the 401ks sort of slipped, like cows slipping through the fence. First a few slipped, and then a few more, and now there's $8 trillion of cows, maverick cows, outside the 401k's jurisdiction. And because this money was still tax-deferred, the Department of Labor felt that it needed to regulate it the same way it regulated 401k's. So essentially, if you have a rollover IRA, this is important to you.
So then what does it mean to people who have rollover IRAs? What's going to happen?
Well, broadly speaking, it means that your financial advisor is now regulated by the Department of Labor instead of by just the Securities and Exchange Commission. So in dealing with an IRA client, the investment advisors now have to behave more like pension trustees than like mutual fund salespeople and insurance brokers. What makes that a little confusing is a lot of times people have IRA accounts and non-IRA accounts, and one of the confusions here is that the advisors can't use different methods of dealing with people. They can't be two different kinds of advisors to the same person just because of their accounts. That's creating confusion, and that's not resolved. But in any case, more specifically, it means that the advisor or the broker can't sell you a mutual fund or an indexed annuity or a variable annuity that pays a commission. As we said, the commission that's paid not by the individual but by the fund company or the life insurance company, unless they and the broker and their broker dealer, which is like another layer above the advisor, unless the broker dealer or the insurance wholesaling firm, which is the layer above the individual agent, signs a what's called a best interest contract. And this contract with the between the organization and the investor pledges that the advisor will act strictly in your interest and not in their interest. And if they charge you a fee, they can only charge you a, quote, reasonable fee. Now, if that sounds vague, it is. If your advisor has to work harder on your planning issues or in researching a product, he can arguably charge a higher percentage of your money or expect a larger commission or charge a higher hourly fee. The more I think of it, the more this is the world of product distribution. Individuals think of this as the world of investing, but the flip side of this, looking at from the other side of the mirror, this is the world of product distribution. And this is how manufacturers of products, and that's how they think of themselves, of mutual funds and annuities, distribute their products the way televisions are distributed or anything else.
That's a good way to put it. I want to ask you, we're going to have to take a quick break, but I want to ask you, you've mentioned rollover IRA and this applying to rollover IRAs several times. When we come back, I want to ask you, does it apply to just a regular traditional IRA? Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening, Carrie Pector, editor and publisher of the Retirement Income Journal and author of Annuities for Dummies. And we are talking about the Department of Labor's fiduciary rule and who it applies to and how it applies or could be applying to you eventually here. So we're going to get some more information about that. But we've been talking about how the Department of Labor traditionally was regulating kind of employer type plans, and now they're putting their toe in the water for individual retirement accounts. But specifically, Carrie has been saying rollover IRAs, which is when you take your traditional employer plan and roll it over into an individual retirement account. We call that a rollover IRA, and there's reasons we keep that designation a little separate from the kind of IRAs we call traditional IRAs, which is someone who might not have an employer plan, Carrie, but they just want to still save for retirement. And the IRS says, hey, you can put it in traditional IRA. Does the Department of Labor tip their toe in the water on the traditional IRAs too, or is this really just the rollover IRAs? Do you know?
No, as far as that goes, the traditional IRA and the rollover IRA are treated the same way. The only reason we're focusing so much on the rollover IRA is that because there's so much more money invested in rollover IRAs, and that's because the limit on contributing to a regular traditional IRA is so low, a few thousand dollars. But rollover IRAs, a person can take $100,000 or a $200,000 401k and roll it into a rollover IRA. So that's how we get to the $8 trillion mark in rollovers, where it's the individual IRAs are not a significant phenomenon.
Okay, so it's when we're talking mainly then tonight kind of about the rollover IRAs in general. But so this new role then with the investment advisor, I guess, would imply that maybe they weren't giving working in someone's best interest.
Well, it goes back to the conflict of interest issue, and their interests were divided. And advisors, it depends on many types of intermediaries. That's the more general term. Financial intermediaries call themselves financial advisors. They can include people who are basically sellers of products, and they can include people who are basically sellers of advice. And this mainly covers, this whole controversy covers, and the regulation covers people who are sellers of products. And before the fiduciary rule, many advisors who at certain times were free to sell you a product, before the fiduciary rule, many advisors who were free to sell you a product because a fund company or an insurance company paid them a handsome commission can now no longer do that. As long as the product was suitable for you, that's quote suitable, unquote, it's just a fudge word, meaning that the product wasn't too risky or appropriate for or was inappropriate for you, the advisor was allowed to recommend that you buy it. Now, I should point out that, again, we're talking about the product world here. We're not talking about the advice world. There are many, many financial advisors, particularly those who do not sell products, but instead charge for providing advice and expertise about topics in addition to or instead of investments, things like wills or estates or tax reduction strategies. These are not affected by the fiduciary rule, and generally they have been in favor of it. These are certified planners, certified financial planners, registered investment advisors, and certain wealth managers called wealth managers who work for, say, the large brokerages like a Morgan Stanley or a Merrill Lynch. These are largely unaffected by the rule.
And that's because their certification or their licensing and by their nature are supposed to be working already maybe in the fiduciary capacity, or they're not selling products, as you said. So if being a fiduciary is acting in the best interest of the client, are there any downsides to the investor?
Well, this is the brokerage industry says that it will harm investors. And the trade associations that represent various segments of the financial services industry have argued that it will reduce access to financial services for middle-income Americans. They believe that it will deprive them of advice and products that currently help them save for retirement or that generate income in retirement. And there is a certain reverse truth to this. It's not that the rule will deprive anyone of advice. There are plenty of advisors who will serve people by charging for the hour or by the financial plan who will gladly serve middle-income clients. But it's true that certain advisors are planning to stop working with rollover IRA customers who have less than, say, $250,000 in investment assets.
And they would stop working with them because?
Well, generally speaking, investors, you may not know this about yourself, but you are categorized by the financial industry. Generally speaking, investors with relatively less savings tend to be sold financial products for a commission, and investors with more savings tend to be sold financial advice in exchange for, say, an annual fee equal to about 1% of their investments. And in the past, many advisors could choose to work with customers either on a commission or a fee basis, depending on how much money, how much savings they had, or depending upon the situation, which could vary in any number of ways. Now, that flexibility enabled them to work with middle class and wealthy clients. But the fiduciary rule kind of makes it harder to sell on commission. So advisors say that they'll have to stop selling on commission to anyone with their retirement money. This only affects the retirement money. So So in any case, certain advisors say they will stop serving clients who have less than a certain threshold amount of savings, which is, say, $250,000, or in the case of the biggest wealth management firms, $500,000.
Okay. That's kind of the precursor. We're going to talk about, as we come back from the break, what's happening with the fiduciary rule. Folks, we're at the halfway mark. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY. 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 56 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, clear, lows around 30. Thursday, sunny, highs around 52. Friday, heavy rain is expected with highs around 47 degrees. Saturday, a chance of rain continues with highs around 53. And Sunday, the sun returns with highs around 60 degrees. The time now is 6:31. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. And next week, folks, I will take tax questions again and talk about what we learned in tax season. We only have a couple weeks left, so get on it. I have my guest this evening is Carrie Pector, editor and publisher of the Retirement Income Journal and author of Annuities for Dummies. And we're talking about the Department of Labor fiduciary rule, which we kind of hear those words all the time in the news. And you may not think it applies to you, but we're talking about why it will apply to you. And we've talked about conflicts of interest and investment advisors selling products or advice and that type of thing. But Carrie, can you tell us, we kind of had thought this fiduciary rule had passed, and then all of a sudden we're hearing, wait, it's delayed. So it seems to be put on the back burner. What's going on with it? Is it in effect or is it not?
Well, this could not be more confusing. And it's causing tremendous amount of speculation and uncertainty in the financial world. Yes, the fiduciary rule went into effect in June 2016 after a great deal of controversy, hearings, comment periods. But the Department of Labor decided not to enforce the rule or did not actually require investment firms to comply with the rule until April 10th of this year. Now, as everyone knows, we had a change in administrations, and suddenly, in the middle of that, between June 2016 and April 10th of this year, we had a change of administration. And in fact, the deadline for complying with the rule was only partially April 10th of this year. The Department of Labor was willing to wait until the start of 2018 to require all firms and advisors to be fully compliant with it. Companies needed to develop new computer systems, new training programs, and new compensation models in order to comply with the rule. That takes a lot of time.
So it could or should be going into enforcement on April 10th then?
Well, now we're in one of those dizzy, you know, cliffhanger situations where the April 10th semi-permeable deadline is looming. The Trump administration is trying to reverse it. After Donald Trump was inaugurated, he ordered the acting Secretary of Labor, the nominated Secretary of Labor, Alexander Acosta, has not been confirmed yet. He ordered the acting Secretary of Labor to review the rule to see if it was consistent with Trump's philosophy, which favors the removal or reduction of regulatory red tape, and this was a Class A example of regulatory red tape in the industry's eyes. So everybody assumed that that meant that the new administration would try to repeal the fiduciary rule, perhaps entirely, and that order to review the rule set a bunch of balls rolling. First, the acting Department of Labor Secretary had to delay the April 10th deadline. Well, in any event, the punchline here is that the Trump administration wants to delay or repeal this rule. The rule is harder, is proving harder to reverse and even harder to delay than they thought. It's not one of those executive orders where you can just take a stroke of the pen and say, it's gone.
Mm-hmm. And I know they were looking at cost benefits and things like that. So right. they're going to go through this process. So he wanted to repeal it because of it, the concern of too much regulation and then that cost benefit of its implementation, right?
Cost benefit analyses are manipulatable and flexible in a million ways. It depends on what you decide to term is a cost and what is a benefit and whether a cost is included. Or it's very vague. But anyway, this has cost the financial industry a ton of money. There is no question about that. First, the creation of the rule forced the companies to invest a lot in new training. Advisors had to be told, well, what does it mean to act in the best interest? What does it mean when I sign this contract? Millions of dollars and thousands of man hours have already been spent complying with the rule. And it also cost the mutual fund and annuity business companies a lot of money because distributing these products on commission is the way they distribute these products. Commissions are the way they encourage or compensate people to sell their products. And now that whole process has been disturbed. But the most disturbing thing and the biggest potential cost for the financial services industry from the rule is that they can now be sued by their customers instead of just being put through a kind of industry-dominated arbitration. And they can be sued in class action suits. And as we've seen in the 401k world, class action suits over violations of fiduciary rules have cost millions and millions of dollars in settlements.
Oh, so the Department of Labor, who oversees the employer retirement plans, you can have employees who are suing the employers for not acting in the employees' best interest, so they're not being fiduciaries, and that opened up those companies, those trustees of those 401k plans to lawsuits. And now that could happen in the rollover IRA world. Mm-hmm. So I could see why maybe the investment world would be like a little bit nervous about that. But when you talk about all the cost and expense to maybe change kind of systems, haven't they already put the money in it? I mean, really, if now they pull that back or repeal that regulation, how millions and millions of dollars have already been spent mm-hmm. in probably setting up new systems, new training, and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
If I were those companies, I'm not sure I would be on board with the repeal either because it could come down the pike again anyway later.
Now, the repeal is going to be just as or more disruptive than mm-hmm. the passage of the rule in the first place. And a lot of companies, you have to understand that the Department of Labor wasn't necessarily the lead on this entire trend, even though they passed the rule. There was a sense that automation of financial services, the rise of robo-advisors, online accounts, online investing advice, the rise of index funds and low cost, these things are moving. These are trends that are happening in parallel to the Department of Labor rule. So just taking away the rule would not stop these trends, which mm-hmm. are driving transparency and lower fees. So the companies felt that, you know, we're really going to have to, why fight the Department of Labor rule? Because we're really going to have to, this is the way the world's going anyway.
Right.
Technologically, And philosophically, so they're learning to live with it. But there are groups, especially the ones who are hit hardest by selling
yeah.
products and they complain. Now they're painted as bad guys sometimes, but that's a way you can think of annuities and mutual funds as packaged products. So they contain it. They're sort of, the advice is packed in them. It's just a way of getting useful products to people. The problem was just that, and there's nothing wrong with that, the problem was just that the consumer was very often in the dark about the amount of money, and in many cases, the amount of money was a lot. And the key thing was that people were motivated to sell a particular product because it paid them the most money. It's a very human temptation, and the Department of Labor felt that this was a human temptation that required regulation.
Right. Well, and going back to that, that if there weren't outright disclosure of the fees, and it might be very easy for an investment advisor to say, oh, it's in the paperwork, here's some brochures for you to read. They could have been relying on the their client not reading them. So it wasn't always transparent. So you're right. I do believe the industry is going more toward this transparency. I mean, with asset management fees, you can see them on your statements. With the Department of Labor for the fee disclosures under the 401k plans, everyone probably started getting those. And what a surprise to find out that, yes, your 401k funds also had fees that had disclosures that were important to you. So where are we now? What's the latest? What's, you know?
Well, the very latest, and this is, now we're moving into the mind-numbing, mouse maze of bureaucracy. Fiduciary rule, the Department of Labor made a proposal to delay the fiduciary rule after for 60 days after April 10th. I think that's correct. Anyway, they got public comments over the past 2 weeks. They got more than 1,000 public comments. They pulled those comments. They supposedly read them. Then they took their proposal to delay the rule over to the Office of Management and Budget for a couple of weeks of review of, well, a week of review, because they want to get this done before April 10th, which is now only about 12 days away or less. And so the Department, the Office of Management Budget, which is now the Trump Office of Management Budget, will do a cost-benefit analysis, and everyone expects them to say that this will, regulation and red tape is costing way more than it's worth, and that we should move on to a delay, and then to a even bigger cost-benefit analysis and a new proposal for a new rule. That's what's expected, but the administration has so much on its hands that's bigger, healthcare, tax reform, that a lot of people, well, some people are assuming that this is going to be lost along the way. And it's going to take a lot of political capital to bring out a new rule to replace the old rule, and it'll take time, and it'll take bandwidth, and it's possible that they're going to give up on it. I would say that it's kind of a repeal of and replacement of the Obamacare in miniature. It's analogous to that.
So it might not be repealed at all. It could be delayed, but if even delayed, probably put into action then. It just might be June or July or something like that, because it is a law, which would require a repeal.
Yes.
So if it might not go through, the law will stand.
Yeah, just the way that the Obamacare might stand unless they start a new effort to repeal it. It'll be kind of, nothing will change. It'll be kind of anticlimactic.
So how long can they delay it? Can they continue just adding delays to it?
Well, it's expected that they're going to delay the full implementation deadline to, that means when they start actually holding people accountable for complying with it, until the original deadline for that, the ultimate deadline, was January 1st, 2018.
Okay.
So everybody expects the delay to be at least until 2018. And we'll see. The financial services industry is divided in its opposition to this. So, and Congress is so distracted that, I would bet that it's not going to be repealed.
because it is just a distraction at this point, for them to work on it. Mm-hmm. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to close out the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is gearing up for our 2017 Spring Pledge Drive, starting Friday, March 31st. If we can raise $15,000 before March 31st, we'll push back the start of the drive by 3 days. That will give us a pledge-free weekend. We only have $2,000 to go. Help us keep the drive short. Make your contribution today at WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. And we are in the studio this evening with Carrie Pector, editor and publisher of the Retirement Income Journal, and author of Annuities for Dummies. And we're trying to get a sense around this Department of Labor fiduciary rule, because it is something that many of us don't think applies to us, or it's, you know, the investment world, when in fact we've learned tonight from Carrie that it does apply to us, could apply to us. And in that, the Department of Labor is tipping their toe in the water in regulating individual retirement accounts, in particular rollover IRAs, whereas the Department of Labor prior regulated kind of employer plans. Carrie, you said earlier kind of an institutional kind of, if you think about from an institutional standpoint, and now they're kind of getting into the individual world. And the reason being is because they have seen that there could be conflicts of interest with investment advisors who are offering investment advice around individual retirement accounts, where on our employer plans, there's certain disclosures that we have now. And years ago, we didn't have all the same disclosures there either. And over the past several years, the Department of Labor issued certain requirements for fee disclosures for employer 401k plans. And now they are moving into the individual retirement account world so that you, the investor, can see what kind of fees are being charged, see if there's a conflict of interest, and you know what you're getting into, basically. Right, Carrie? So we've talked about this. This is a law that was supposed to go into effect April 10th with certain elements of it fully in effect January 1 of 2018. And there has been a delay in this rule taking over. But many financial services firms had been gearing up for it and spending millions of dollars in new software and training and everything to get their advisors on board and knowing what they have to do. There's certain disclosures they have to use if they're going to try to sell you products or going to sell you products, or if they're products that you're interested in, because you might want those products. I don't know. But there's certain disclosures now that would have to be made to you, the investor. And this may go through. So we're talking with Carrie, is it going to get repealed? Is it not going to get repealed? Well, we're not really sure at this point, but with all the stuff that's going on in Washington, it may not end up getting repealed and may just continue to then implement into January of 2018. So Carrie, can we talk for a minute how this could benefit people? And let's look at the positive and the good. I mean, the Department of Labor was doing it to help the public.
Mm-hmm. They want people to be able to trust the advice. They want people to understand the distinction between it's very difficult to describe. They want to do away with the blurring of the line between sales and advice. A recommendation to buy something has been called advice, and to clarify this. This only matters if someone tries to sell you a product in where you will use the money in your rollover IRA or IRA to buy it. In that case, your the person you're dealing with is being held now to a much higher level of probity and fiduciariness, and the as an individual, you can demand it from them now. You can say, well, you told me there's no fees involved. How does that? There must be some fees involved. Could you tell me more about that?
And there could be fees involved. I mean, people who are giving advice. So you just have to know what the fees are and what kind of fees they might be. Right?
Yes. Yes. A lot of this. The argument against regulation is that people should be are adults and should know how to protect themselves from these things. They very often they're not experts in finance. It's what we call there's an imbalance in the information. It's a asymmetric information where the advisor knows a lot of things that you don't know.
It's not transparent in some cases.
Right. And bottom line, the government just felt that tax deferred retirement money should not lose its special protections when it leaves the 401k and moves to the IRA. That the IRA money should be, I compared it to, you're having a child who moves out of your house and of the bedroom in your house and goes to college to a co-ed dorm on a wet campus. And this was like what happened to the money when it moves from the 401k world to the IRA world, and so much of it moved over that the Department of Labor, like a parent, said, oh my gosh, we have to establish some rules about the freshman dorms.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. So going forward, what would people expect to see then if they're going in and talking to an advisor? Let's say it all goes through now. How will that look then?
This opens a whole new range of issues. The short answer is, groups of people will now be divided in new ways. If you have more than a certain amount of money, you will be moved into a managed account, some kind of wealth management account. If you have less, you will be moved into a online kind of affair that will resemble the kind of services you got in a 401k plan. That's how the industry is dealing with it.
Mm.
So if somebody suggests, if you have an account that's, you may be approached by a financial, your current financial advisor who used to sell things on commission sometimes and take fees sometimes, will now assign you to one of those groups. You'll be either, if you have too little money, you'll be doing mostly everything online and you'll be able to call an advisor. And if you have enough money, you will be meeting personally with an advisor. And this basically is the future of retirement advice. In fact, the phone call that you make to your advisor will someday be an artificial intelligence person, very much like Siri, who knows a lot about you. That's the not so distant future of financial advice.
I guess what where some of that comes from, if you kind of step back from it for a moment, you could have someone who had $5,000 in a 401k, and it would be the same amount of paperwork and possibly the same amount of questions as someone who might have $500,000 in a 401k.
Right, exactly.
And so the cost, you know, obviously there's different kind of advice for someone who might have $500,000, but at the same time, there's still cost related to transferring money from a 401k to an IRA. And Carrie, a lot of times the employers don't want to keep those accounts that are smaller anymore either.
Mm-hmm.
And where you could leave it with your employer for years and years in the past, a lot of employers have written into their plan descriptions, hey, if it's below a certain amount, we're kicking it out. And sometimes they either send a check to the former employee or have some kind of a rollover to an IRA option, I think I've heard.
Small accounts are very expensive for financial services companies. It's a huge problem since most accounts are small.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, the people with large accounts subsidize the revenue that comes from the people with large accounts subsidize the services that people in small accounts get. And that's simply an economic issue that's just a fact of life.
So we have just a few minutes left. You feel okay about the fiduciary rule? You feel like it's going to serve the purpose, or that they were intending to take away some of the conflict of interest that investment advisors who sell products?
It's
or no opinion. You're just kind of giving us the facts tonight.
I would say that it in places where people don't have a lot of options, where the local insurance person in a rural area is the only advisor around, and the only way they could get paid was by a commission, then we're going to have some issues about of services being lost, and that's the main. That's one big concern. And
well, maybe they should just have put like a dollar level on this. That would have helped.
It's interesting. This I don't want to restart the whole conversation, but what the Department of Labor was really angry about was people selling indexed annuities and variable annuities to people with IRAs.
Yeah.
That was what really upset them, and they could have. They came down with a sledgehammer on the whole industry when all they needed to do, this is my opinion, was to attack those products in particular, and since they were trying to establish principles, they may have not wanted to come down on two particular products,
mm-hmm.
but really that's the main thing. This is really 80% about selling indexed annuities and variable annuities to people with their retirement money.
You know, in your book, now it's been a while probably since you've done that, Annuities for Dummies. Do you talk about the different kinds of annuities in there? And is that book still applicable, or do you need to do an updated version?
The book is still applicable because what I focused on in the book was different kinds of annuities and how they are different tools for different tasks. And while the little details have changed, the product details, the regulatory details have changed, the basic understanding is it's not my basic theme was that you can't talk about annuities in general. You have to say this annuity
exactly.
is for saving, this annuity is for income, this annuity is for this type of risk, this annuity is for another type of risk, because annuities are insurance. I tried to, you know, clear up the misunderstanding that they're not a strange kind of investment. They're actually insurance. And so those elements of the book, making those distinctions between different types of annuities and the difference between an annuity and investment product, those factors are still valid.
And that's what's important to understand. There's differences, mm-hmm. and people need to go in with, mm-hmm. with knowledge. Carrie, I thank you for being here tonight. Any last words? We got a minute?
I would say that if I look at the investment process as if you're bringing a lot of money to the table, you should act like you're the one who's financing the transaction and consider yourself to be the one who's responsible for being in charge. If you don't take that responsibility, you really are at the mercy of other people.
Now, Carrie, you said that your retirement income journal is more geared toward the people who are the institutional people, but how do people reach you if they're interested in talking to you? Or do you not do that?
Oh, certainly they can find me at they can email me at carrie.pector@retirementincomejournal.com or go to the website retirementincomejournal.com and scroll to the bottom and find my email address.
Retirementincomejournal.com is probably
mm-hmm.
easier for people because Pector is P-E-C-H-T-E-R, and they might not realize there's an H in there, right?
Well, this is a German-speaking area originally, and so they should
be
able to spell
that.
They
would all know, right, right. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it because I think this certainly was an area that was very confusing for a lot of people, and sometimes they make it sound scary, and then when you kind of go through it blow by blow, it really isn't as scary, at least for the individuals who it's intended to help. So thank you for sharing all of that. Folks, next week I'm going to talk about what we learned from tax season, and the second week of April I'm going to talk about extensions and estimated payments and things like that to make sure if you aren't done that we get you there. I want to thank Carrie Pector for being here. Thank you, Lori, for being here. And Jeff, thank you as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.